Johnito.
Hi, John. This is Patricia Smith with World Update in Boston.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Been going through all sorts of stuff on your blog and trying to get a better grip on both screencasting and podcasting. So I know more than I did last week, which is good. And your stuff is great. I saw the new one you did with the walking map of Keene, and that looked great. Kind of neat to see how you've gotten a lot of response from that, too.
Yeah, well, that's all part of the blog phenomenon.
Yep.
Right. This is all woven through and enabled by that.
I thought that was really kind of neat where you were saying back in November you weren't sure what to call, you know, what's now named screencasting, and you had sent out a little call for names on the blog and got some ideas, and you were sort of weighing some of the ones that you had either pondered or people had sent you, and you were saying, well, this would be good, but not really, doesn't fit this particular category. The term screencast, you know, now, here we are in February 2005, is that now, do you think, taken hold kind of industry-wide in a sense? I mean,
it looks like it's going to.
Yeah. Can we credit you?
You're welcome to credit me. You know,
yeah.
This becomes an interesting thing.
I mean,
there are some political controversies going on right now around the origins of podcasting.
Right.
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 And
so,
you know, I guess when I talk to people about this stuff, I'm careful to point out that none of it's new.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
right.
That we've had the possibility of putting audio files up on the internet for more than a decade. And,
right.
And as a matter of fact, I was doing what we would now call screencasting a decade ago when I had, at the time, a product for Byte Magazine. I was the executive editor there and also ran New Media and was the developer of the Byte CD-ROM.
Uh-huh.
And for the CD-ROM, I made a training video using, at the time, a product called Lotus ScreenCam.
Oh, okay.
Right? So, you know, I mean, this stuff's all been around for ages. It's just, you know, an interesting question as to what is going on right now at this moment that is
right.
creating all of the excitement.
The
and there are a combination of factors which are somewhat overlapping as between podcasting and screencasting and somewhat distinct as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, we could probably take those in any order that you like.
Yeah, just why don't you just kind of go on about those? I'll just try to keep up and take some notes.
Okay. So I would say that the factors that apply in both cases are, number one, the pervasiveness of internet connectivity, right, which just continues to increase
right.
By leaps and bounds. Number two, the growth in broadband,
right,
such that it's now far, far easier for people to consume large media objects in the multi-megabyte range, and it's getting easier all the time. I work out of a home office in Keene, New Hampshire, and I've had DSL here for going on 5 years.
Right.
A couple of weeks ago, I was actually going to switch to Roadrunner to get a faster connection,
yep.
and I called up my provider, and they said, oh, well, actually, what are you at? You know, 384 up and down? We can bump you to 3 megabits.
Right.
And I said, oh, how much more is that? Oh, actually, it'll be less.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? I know.
So, right, I mean, you know, so, I mean, that sort of acceleration is, you know, we've always known it was coming, right? But
right.
it's really starting to hit the mainstream
right.
now.
Right.
You know,
right.
So there's that factor. There's also the simple fact that, I mean, for the longest time, really, the playback of audio on computers was problematic.
Right.
Right. And we're just, you know, sort of finally now getting to the point where what used to be called the multimedia PC can be more or less taken for granted.
Right, right.
Right. So the platform has kind of come together, right? And then this is an interesting one, which has not been very widely appreciated up until now. And it is that the distinction between streaming and downloading of media content has begun to blur in an extremely interesting way. You know, you, for example, when you hit that Google Maps screencast that I put up on Friday, experienced it immediately with no delay.
Yeah.
Right. So in a lot of people's minds, what that means is that the content was streaming to me, right? In other words, on demand as opposed to having to be downloaded.
Right.
But as a matter of fact, although it appears that way to you, it really is only a file sitting on a server.
Yeah.
And there is no specialized machinery on the back end.
Right.
Right. So, you know, this, I think, really confused things for a long time.
You know,
it confused me, actually, until very recently when I started to really dig into this stuff
understood
that although I have now, at this point, taught myself how to use, quote-unquote, streaming servers and can do live, you know, real-time streaming if I want to. There are very few circumstances in which it's really interesting to do that. It basically only applies to a live performance of some kind that you want to be able to relay to people in real time.
Mm-hmm.
And then immediately when you do that kind of thing, you run into scaling issues because, you know, how many streams can you handle?
Right.
So the fact that people can now have the experience of streaming while enjoying the simplicity, both from a production standpoint and a consumption standpoint, the simplicity of downloading is, I think, a really crucial point here that is, again, it's not been very widely appreciated.
Right.
And this actually ties into the other major point, specifically around podcasting, which I forgot to mention, which is the iPod phenomenon, and more broadly, the rapid adoption of portable MP3 playback devices.
Right.
You know, which last I heard is at something like 11 million people in the U.S.
Right.
And just growing by leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
Now that's one of the things that is obviously, you know, relevant to podcasting in a different way than to screencasting, at least at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's compare two situations, right? There's content on the web, which is streaming content in the true sense of streaming, which means, you know, that I have to be at my computer in order to consume it, whether it's video or audio. But let's say it's audio.
Okay.
So let's say, and this was often true, you know, in sort of the earlier days of the web, there'd be a conference, and the conference was available online, right? And you could listen to it at your computer.
Right.
Except, you know, like how many extra hours of time at your computer do you have
to
consume lengthy audio broadcasts,
right?
Well, the answer is you don't, right? Now, you know, in recent months, as this podcasting idea has kind of kicked in, you know, there's a massive shift toward the publishing of content in a downloadable format, which can still be experienced in the way that the stream was experienced. If I want to, you know, if there's an hour thing and I want to figure out if it's worth me downloading and listening to, you know, I can just start playing it at my computer, and I can even, this is fascinating and again a very unappreciated aspect of the whole deal. I can even randomly access parts of the thing. So if there's an hour-long MP3 file, and I want to skip around inside of it, I can skip around inside of it even without downloading the whole file.
Oh, you can?
Because, it's actually an amazing unknown fun fact. It depends on the player that you are using. But, for example, if you're using... Try it sometime. Try a real player, okay? And just open up an MP3 URL, right, that is just being served up by a normal web server.
Now, this would be if I was on my MP3 player, if I was
no,
on...
No. This is if you're on your computer.
So
you're on your computer,
yep.
Right? Open up, you know, go to one of the IT Conversations podcasts, right?
Okay.
Find the place where it says download the MP3. So it's like an hour-long MP3 program, right?
Okay.
Open up that URL in real. Okay, so you'll start hearing the first, you know, few seconds of the broadcast, right?
Yep.
And then just drag the slider to like, you know, minute 45.
Oh, okay, right.
And it will seek ahead to that point and start playing, right? So that, you know, again, that blurring of the line between streaming and downloading has been, I think, a crucial factor here. But the downloading part of it is really powerful, and that's the thing that is, you know, probably the biggest factor right now in terms of mainstream, you know, the transformation of radio, if you will, into an internet medium. You know, now that there are starting to be substantial numbers of interesting audio files put up on the web, You know, I mean, here's an example of how it's changed my life. I drove down to a meeting in Massachusetts a couple of weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and it was a case where I would have really had to make a decision in the past whether or not it was worth my time. You know, an hour and a half in the car
right.
down and an hour and a half in the car back. Actually, it was 2 hours, I think.
Yeah.
And I would have had to weigh that, right? It's like, is it really worth showing up in person at this meeting, you know, to waste 4 hours in the car?
Right.
Well, on this trip, I listened to, I mean, I have my own little pirate radio station now mm-hmm. in my car, which mm-hmm. consists of a $100 MP3 player
mm-hmm.
and a $25 FM transmitter that takes the sound from the MP3 player and sends it to my car radio.
Right,
right.
Right,
so
right.
I tune my car radio to 88.1. I tune the MP3 player to 88.1.
Yeah.
And I proceeded on, you know, I proceeded to have the most productive use of that 4 hours
yep.
that I could have possibly had.
Right.
You know, so for example, you know, at the time I was planning an event for InfoWorld around services-oriented architecture.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some people I was thinking about having as speakers.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to spend several hours listening to talks that these people had given.
Right.
And thinking really deeply about how they fit in and, you know, how that reflected on the shape of the program that we were developing.
Right.
Okay. I listened, when I got done with that, to some other lectures from conferences which I might have liked to have attended, but didn't,
right.
but still was able to effectively, you know, consume the content.
Right.
And I also spent time reviewing an interview that I had recorded with someone, which I was going to edit and turn into a podcast.
Right.
Right. So, right. I mean, that 4 hours was, you know, arguably the most productive 4 hours
right,
that
right,
I spent
right,
the whole day.
Right.
right.
And your hands were on the wheel and you weren't holding
my hands
the phone.
On the wheel
yeah.
And, you know, apart from the fact that you have to, you know,
be thinking about this. Yeah.
It, you know, audio can be very engrossing.
Right.
And, you know, you have to, right, not lose track of what you're doing.
Right.
But,
right.
It is, you know, so there's that, right? There's sort of the
right.
drive time thing, which is huge, you know, and there's also just, you know, all of those other times. You know, when
right.
you're, you know, in my case, you know, I do a lot of running, so
right.
I have an hour period to really sort of focus on something. And, you know, or walking or whatever, right?
Right,
so,
right.
You know, I mean, this is, I mean, from a, now what I've just described to you is sort of my geeky professional take on
right,
all of this, right.
right?
You know, but I mean, the sort of the mainstream view of this, obviously, is that the portable audio device is the new transistor radio.
You're right,
right.
Right.
And the internet is the new, you know, radio wave.
Right, right.
So
yeah, amazing.
Yeah, it is.
In a way, it's almost like going full circle in some strange way, you know.
It is.
Yeah.
It is, and
yeah.
you know, among other things, I mean, just sort of out of the scope of IDG, you know, we're going to be seeing, we are seeing, a renaissance of creative stuff happening, ranging from audio theater to, you know, endless amounts of music, and all of this stuff on the creative side intersects with what Lawrence Lessig has been advocating in terms of the Creative Commons licensing regime. I don't know if you've run into that.
I haven't, no.
Okay. So, well, I'll just mention Creative Commons licensing and we won't kind of go into it, but it's a recent development in the last couple of years that aims to carve out a space in the world of content within which creators of content explicitly license their stuff in various ways for generally non-commercial use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but what it basically says is, I'm a musician, and I would like you to download my music. I would like you to trade my music with your friends.
Right.
Because I think I might be able to build an audience by doing things that
right.
way. So, you know, this applies to music. It applies increasingly to spoken word audio content, I assume it will apply in the video realm as well as
right.
that gets going.
Right, right. In terms of accessing things that are available via a podcast, I mean, that's something where, for example, with your blog, I would go to your blog and you would reference that you have something available and someone would be able to go to that URL and download it.
Yeah.
And that's basically how people become aware of podcasts that are out there?
Yeah, basically. And
okay.
that, again, this is an interesting and slightly political thing because
yeah.
there is an official story around podcasting
mm-hmm.
which is that podcasting is the combination of portable MP3 players and RSS feeds.
Right.
If you're okay. familiar with that term.
Yeah, yes, I am.
Right.
Yeah.
And a feature that was added to a version of RSS called an enclosure, which contains the URL of an MP3 file.
Okay.
And on top of all of that, an application, and the dominant one is called iPodder.
Okay.
iPodder X, actually. An application which enables you to subscribe to a program being, in a sense, a series of podcasts, right, which occur on some regular or irregular schedule.
Right.
And have that program, all of the episodes of that program, automatically not just downloaded by your computer, but transferred to your iPod.
So not only downloaded to your computer, but also transferred to the iPod.
Yeah, right. Wow. So the idea is, and it's a very powerful idea, pioneered by, as you will read in all of these articles, a couple of guys, Dave Weiner, who was originally with Userland and was a weblog and RSS pioneer, and Adam Curry, who was, you read the article this morning.
Your article?
No, the Boston Globe one.
Yes, I did. Yes.
So you know, this is it's been in Wired, it's been the New York Times, right? So you know, these guys kind of put those pieces together, it's sort of closing the loop there in a way that it really truly makes the iPod feel like a consumer device, you know, that has programmed content in it, if you will, right?
Yeah,
in the sense that, you know, once I determine that, you know, your podcast is, you know, a regular source of good stuff, I just, quote unquote, tune you in.
Right.
And then, you know, as long as I dock my iPod every night, you know, in the morning when I, you know, leave the house to get in my car or get on the train or wherever, right, you know, and I turn on my iPod, you know, your channel is there. It's as if I've, you know, got your channel on the device, right?
Right.
So, you know, a very clever sort of arrangement.
Right.
Now, having said all of that, the reality is that, you know, you don't need all of those pieces to experience this stuff, and a lot of people don't use all of those pieces.
Right.
Maybe
right.
at this point, most people.
Right.
So,
because this what you just described is almost like an automated way of doing it, really easy way of accessing, but you can do it in other ways.
You can, and in very large numbers, people do.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, in the same blog item where if your RSS reader were aware of my enclosure tag, it would find the URL of the MP3 file.
Right.
Invariably, people just also mention the MP3 file in the text of their blog item.
Right.
They just link to it. And, you know, I would say most of the time at this point in history anyway, people are right-click downloading that thing you know, doing whatever they want to it, right?
Right.
You know, moving it however they will onto their iPod, or if it's not an iPod, there's, you know, different ways of doing it.
Right. Okay.
And so on. Which sort of parallels, actually, the whole story of RSS, right?
Right.
I mean, I've been publishing an RSS feed since, believe it or not, 1999.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And in various ways. And, you know, for pretty much all the stuff that I've written in all of the various incarnations of my various journalism jobs and in my independent life as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, so at this point, for me, as someone who is a voracious consumer and processor of information, in particular in the IT world, and the areas that I cover as an analyst for InfoWorld, you know, I couldn't live without my RSS reader. You know,
right.
It is how I synthesize vast numbers of different flows of information.
Right.
You know, in a way that is just is unprecedentedly efficient. Right.
Right.
So I couldn't, you know, and a growing number of people like me who process information for a living.
Right.
You know, I kind of can't imagine life without an RSS reader.
Right.
But, you know, 6 years into the RSS phenomenon, I mean, you know, the sort of civilians that I turn on to blogging. So, you know, my wife, my friend Larry, right? They have blogs now.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that few, if any, of their readers at this point are consuming their content through RSS.
Right.
You know, people are still basically visiting their blogs and, you know,
whenever they want to
see what's new. And, you know, it's sort of from a sort of purist perspective, you kind of cringe and go like, why don't they get it?
They're just not there yet.
But, you know, but I think, you know, if you sort of step back, what you see is that the beauty of this stuff is that, it supports that whole continuum of behaviors.
Right.
You know, so you don't need to use an RSS reader to read blogs. You don't need to use iPod or X, you know, to automatically transfer podcasts onto your MP3 player, right? It's like cooler if you do, and eventually more people will. But, you know, many, if not most of the benefits of these things can be had in more traditional ways using methods and behaviors that people already are familiar with.
Right.
So,
good point.
You know, which is interesting.
Let me see. Do you know if any other IDG entities out there are doing much with either screencasts or podcasts?
I don't know. I'm sure no one's doing anything with screencasts yet.
You don't think they are in that realm?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay. I did sort of a cursory look around at a few sites and nothing jumped out at me. But
Okay. I mean,
but in terms of how you're using them on the InfoWorld site, can you give me a sense of I know they come in so many different forms. I thought that was interesting where you said here's like a little list of terms, you know, screencast genres, you know, this is the tutorial. You know, there's so many different kinds.
I mean, the one that's up there right now is definitely like one of the best ones I've done, and it's getting a lot of traction.
The one with going through the cemetery.
That's pretty awesome.
Right.
It really is. I mean, on a couple of levels, right? You know, one of them being that this is, in my view, you know, the most interesting thing about this is it's a mode of storytelling.
Yeah.
Right? And the story that I'm really telling in that screencast is one about the convergence of GPS and handheld devices.
Right.
And an open services web that enables, you know, anyone walking around on the planet to, like I said, you know, to annotate some location on the planet, you know, through the web, right? And so that's really the story that's being told
here.
And you know, there's arguably there's just no better way that you could tell that story than through that medium.
Right.
And there just isn't another way to do it.
Any thoughts on, you know, if any other IDG business units wanted to get into this realm, either the screencasting side or podcasting? Do you have any sort of, you know, top five tips for either medium of what people should be thinking about?
I guess it would depend on, there's so many different objectives you could have here.
Right. You can kind of define things as you want to.
It would depend on what your objective was.
Okay.
Right? You know, I guess what I would say, just in general, is that you know, we have always known that rich media on the web was going to happen and that it would intersect with publishing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we thought that 10 years ago and it sort of just didn't get going and then we all sort of forgot about it. And then, you know, for all of the factors that I mentioned at the beginning, it's coming around now in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would say that just generally, and again, I don't really have sort of a complete view of all of IDG's operations, you know, but to the extent that a lot of it is around print publishing and a certain amount of print-oriented web stuff, you know, I would say that the skill sets around, well, first of all, just simply performing, you know, which has been hard for me, actually. I mean, part of what I'm trying to get out of this is to improve my own speaking skills and articulation, because I've been a writer for so long, and, you know, although I do a certain amount of public speaking, it's hard for me, and I'm working consciously on improving that aspect of my skill set, and, you know, this is helping, I think, with that, and I think that that's going to be increasingly something that everyone who thinks of themselves today as a writer is going to have to be fluent with.
Right.
And related to that, I would say that everyone who thinks of themselves today as a writer and editor is going to want to be, if not have to be, fluent with things like editing rich media and doing the sorts of production stuff that
right.
happens here, because it really, you know, I mean, at a certain level, I guess you could say, well, you'll just have some, you know, you'll just have people who do that.
Right.
But, you know, it's like we don't have people anymore who type for us.
Right, right,
right,
right.
We don't have people anymore who, you know, do our own line editing of our own stuff that
right,
we write.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
These are the yeah. comparable skills.
Right, right.
For this era, and it is challenging. I have to say. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm very, very skilled at web content management, and I am a software developer, and I am a very technical guy, you know, and I've been a writer for a long time, and I've got this whole mix of skills in my background, you know, that make this stuff approachable by me, but it's still been a challenge, right? I mean, I'm still, you know, I'm just getting to the point with some of this stuff where I feel like I'm beginning to be competent.
Right.
You know, so it's just something to be aware of, right?
Right.
I mean, it's both, I mean, I find it, you know, exciting.
Right.
And challenging, you know, to be learning these things. And
right.
plus it's actually a lot of fun.
Right. And a lot of it is skills that you really have to kind of parse out on your own. I mean, this, you know, classroom stuff you can do, but I mean, a lot of it is just trial and error, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And The other, I guess, broad comment would be, again, to go back to the beginning, that this is all ultimately woven through and enabled by the blog world.
Right.
You know, so to the extent that there's anybody in IDG who, you know, thinks of themselves as someone who, you know, both follows the industry and, you know, is writing or editing or publishing about well, really whatever
right.
it is that they do, you know, I would say that, you know, if you're not at this point both reading the blog world,
right.
you know, on its own terms, which is to say, you know, through an RSS reader, because now, you know, from a professional perspective, I would say that's at this point something you really
essential.
Should be doing.
Right.
I mean, like, you
yeah.
know, you don't have to be using an RSS reader to follow my wife's blog if you don't want to. But
right.
if you're like somebody who's professionally in the
right.
business of
right.
of what we do, I think you really, at this point, ought
right.
to be, right? And
right.
at the same time, I think you really ought to be experimenting with publishing into that space.
Right.
Because it's only once you publish into the space that you start to really close the feedback loop. And, you know, that, I mean, you saw what I sent you this morning, right? You saw the, you know, the fact that I posted this thing, you know, late on a Friday.
Right.
Right. And it started to pick up interest over the weekend.
Right.
You know, and by Monday morning, you know, and it's probably going to build for a couple more days yet.
Right.
But by
right.
Monday morning, right, there was, you know, all of this, reaction.
Right.
Which I can monitor.
Right.
Right. So in other words, you know, it's so different, right? I mean, I wrote a book once and it was a very lonely experience. You know, you spend a year writing a book and you put it out there and
right.
it's like, you know, you just tossed a bottle into the ocean.
Right.
What happened? Right.
Right. Right.
And, you know, like the articles that you write for print, the same way, right? I mean,
yeah.
it's, you, know, you get some.
Who's out there? Right.
You get some
yeah.
feedback, but it's
yeah.
it's very attenuated,
right?
Right.
right.
You know? But so, in this medium, it's like you push post, right? And like 90 minutes later, you know how it went over.
Right. Right.
In a very real sense.
And that's so energizing. I mean, it's got to be incredibly energizing.
It is.
yep.
It is.
Yep.
It is.
I mean, in our little world, you know, here with World Update, I mean, it's the same type of thing. You know, we don't get as much feedback as we'd like to. And, you know, there's ways we can, I think, start changing that, partly through what we learn from people like you and what you're doing. Hopefully we'll be able to get more feedback, and that's, like I said, energizing to your future efforts.
Yeah, it would help me to read your stuff, by the way, if it had an RSS feed.
Ah, yes, you know, that's actually come up. You know, I think part of our challenge, too, is that, you know, there's just, well, there's three of us writing for World Update now, but, you know, we're not as prolific as other, you know, writers at the IDG, and I think, I'm not sure how quickly we're churning out things where, you know, it would be useful to have the RSS feed, but, you know, maybe it would be.
Well, the point is, you do some publication, and it comes out in some frequency.
Right, weekly.
And it's on some version of the web. Right.
I
will never visit that place to see whether or not you've done a new issue.
Right.
If I am subscribed to your feed,
yep.
Every time you put something out, whatever it is that you put,
right.
I'll know about it.
Right.
It's this notification process
exactly.
that happens, right? You know,
exactly.
There's stuff there. This channel just produced a new thing. You know, this is the summary of it. Do you want to click through?
Right.
And that's, you know, fundamentally the whole RSS dynamic,
right?
And it just is, it is transformative.
Right. That's great. I mean, I'm just starting to explore that whole arena, too. So once I get a better handle on it, maybe we can start to think about implementing it.
Well, I would just do it because it should take you about 10 minutes.
Right.
It's just not a big deal.
Right.
It's not like you have to have meetings and,
right.
you know, do a 3-month development plan. And,
right.
It's just like,
just
it's very simple stuff.
Yep.
You know, really.
Good.
Just do it.
That's encouraging. Thank you. We will.